TV with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Thursday, September 16th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. Now, as many of you know out there, the Pentagon and what happened on the morning of 9/11 has become one of our favorite subjects here on Wing TV. Well, a couple of weeks ago, I was doing some research, and I hit a little snag. I needed some help. So I called up one of my buddies. He's been on Wing TV before, Mr. George Humphrey. He's the author of this book, 9/11, The Great Illusion, and also this video, 9/11, The Great Illusion. Anyway, I talked to him and I said, I need some help on a couple questions. I said, I don't have the expertise to really get at the answers to these things. And he said, well, I know a man named Russ Wittenberg. He gave me his phone number. He says, call this guy up and I'll bet he'll be able to help you. So I hung up the phone, dialed this number instantly, got a hold of Russ, and I was only going to talk to him for a couple minutes. What ended up, I bet we spoke for about 45 minutes that day. And he knows so much more than we do because he's actually an airplane pilot. He's flown this, and neither me and Lisa have ever flown a plane.
Right.
And probably 99% of the people watching the show haven't. So this is giving us a new angle on what's going on. So
right. A pilot's perspective.
Exactly. So what we'd like to do right now is welcome Mr. Russ Wittenberg to Wing TV.
Welcome to Wing, Russ.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here, Lisa and Victor. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah. Now, to get started, I guess you heard the intro. Why don't you tell the Wing viewers a little bit about yourself and your history as a pilot?
Okay, just a brief history. I started out in aviation as a graduate of the University of Miami, Florida, on a hurricane, and I went through Air Force ROTC and received my commission in the Air Force as a second lieutenant. And from there, I went through Air Force flying school as an Air Force fighter pilot during the Vietnam era, and 100 combat missions in Vietnam. And there I got out of the Air Force, and I got a job with the airlines, National Airlines up in Miami. And I flew with them a short time, then I went with Pan American World Airways for 20 years. And in 1986, Pan Am sold its Pacific Division to United Airlines for $750 million, and 430 of us pilots went Pan Am to United. So the reason I tell you that is because I had the unique position of having been with two different airlines. I flew the Pan Am 747, which went down to Lockerbie, Scotland, 16 years ago. And I also flew the two United airplanes that were involved in 9/11, those two actual airplanes.
Right.
So you knew the TWA 800 guys.
Oh, okay. So you're in a very unique position that's different than 99% of all researchers.
Okay, considering that, from your experience as a pilot and also in the Air Force, are all 757 and 767 aircraft equipped with computerized flight control systems?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, they are.
For the purpose of rescuing the plane in the event of a hijacking, correct? Of an attempted hijacking?
Lisa and Victor, when I was on those airplanes, they never told us about those systems.
Okay, it's my understanding that they are, but if they are, if these systems were in place, then they were either disabled, they malfunctioned, or they weren't used. In your experience as a pilot, could a remote recovery have been executed to save those four flights in that circumstance?
You know, I absolutely don't know for absolute certainty, but the way things, that all the information that we have collected in writing a book called Painful Questions, I was the aviation technical consultant with Eric Hupschmidt on a book called Painful Questions. We have been kind of led to a dead end on that. I don't have the hardcore evidence as to exactly how they worked this hijacking, but I can assure you beyond a shadow of a doubt that these so-called 19 evildoers did not fly those airplanes in the manner in which they say. So I really don't have the hardcore evidence, and until I do have that, I can't say definitively one way or another.
Right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Well, we've had Eric on our show twice now, and he wrote a fantastic book in Painful Questions. Now, I'm glad you brought up the hijackers, because one of the big sticking points on the government and the media, the mainstream media's official version of events, is that there was a pilot named Hani Hanjour. Now, from all of the flight schools that he attended over the years, Every single instructor said this guy, his capabilities were very feeble. He was inept, basically. And even 1 month before 9/11, he tried to rent a Cessna plane, and his mechanical abilities were so bad that they refused to even allow him to rent one. So what I'm asking you is that, according to the official story, Flight 77 went, it dropped 7,000 feet in about 2.5 minutes. It did a 270-degree bank, swooped in only inches above the ground, and struck the Pentagon. Now, from what I know, like they said 95% of all top-rate pilots couldn't even pull this maneuver off. So would Hani Hanjour be able to do this?
No, no way. I mean, their plane, I was watching 60 Minutes. Did you see the 60 Minutes segment they did about 3 or 4 weeks ago on the Washington, D.C. sector controller that allegedly followed that flight into the Pentagon?
No, we didn't.
Okay, well, I recorded that flight, and it's so full of holes, it looks like a piece of Swiss cheese. The airplane could not possibly have flown at those speeds which they said it did without going through what they call a high-speed stall.
Uh-huh.
The airplane won't go that fast, and it started pulling those high-G maneuvers at those bank angles. And so for them to expect this airplane, alleged airplane, I might say,
right.
to run these maneuvers with this total amateur at the controls is simply ludicrous.
Right.
The airplane would have fallen out of the sky due to what they call high-speed buffet.
Yeah. Now, before Lisa asking this question, her next question, we want everyone to hear this. Hani Hanjour did not fly a Boeing 757 into the Pentagon the way they said it. This is the first very important point.
To follow up with Victor's question, can you comment or explain the government version regarding the ability of a 757 aircraft to maneuver just like a military jet aircraft? He talked about the pilot, but the plane itself. Is the plane capable of doing these kind of maneuvers at all?
No, it's an airliner built to carry people and a lot of cargo. It is not an F-16-type airplane. And it's stressed for 2.5 to 3 G's, positive G's, and about 2 negative G's at the maximum. And beyond that, it starts coming apart, and especially at high speeds.
Uh-huh. Okay.
The airplanes are, you know, it's about a roughly 100-ton airplane.
Uh-huh.
And an airplane that weighs 100 tons all assembled is still going to have 100 tons of disassembled trash and parts after it hits a building. There was no wreckage from a 757 at the Pentagon.
Yeah, and that's one of the big things we're going to touch upon in just a minute.
Okay, so the government is going to have us believe that the worst breakdown in our air defenses occurred on 9/11. In your experience, has this ever happened before? And also, would you comment on the lack of disciplinary measures that have not taken place as a result of this massive breakdown in our air defense system?
Well, that's very easy to do. I like to put it in a parlance that the average layman can understand. Once you get an ATC clearance, you go from A to B either through direct or through a Jet Airways. If you deviate from that clearance 1 mile left or right of center line, air traffic control is going to call you, and they're going to say, 714, what are you doing? You never gave you permission to deviate.
Uh-huh.
And once you get locked onto your assigned altitude, if you deviate plus or minus 300 feet, the bell goes off and you get an automatic violation. Now, also, if you turn off your transponder, which they all allegedly did at roughly the same time, that's also a violation.
Right.
So it takes the alphanumeric coding information off the secondary radar screens, and leaves nothing but a green blob. And so there was, once that those transponders were turned off, there's no way of telling that of what in the information the controllers were looking at other than the green blob. That's a primary radar, they call it.
Right, very good. Well, a few minutes ago you mentioned the dimensions of a Boeing 757. It has a wingspan of 124 feet. Its tail from the tip to the ground is 44 feet high. It's the length of it is about 156 feet, and as you said, it weighs anywhere from 80 to 100 tons. Now, when we looked at the hole in the Pentagon before the roofline and the facade crumbled, And we measured the windows. The initial hole was only 15 to 18 feet in diameter. So, Russ, tell us, how can this huge 100-ton airplane fit inside that 18-foot hole? Is it possible?
It's not possible. And that single hole was from the single engine jet. The vehicle that hit the Pentagon was not Flight 77. We think, as you may have heard before, it was a cruise missile which had one single jet engine.
Uh-huh.
And that hole which you've seen was made by that single jet engine. Otherwise, if a 757 hit that building, you'd have two holes.
Right.
Because the 757 has two jet engines. Now, these jet engines are very, very tough pieces of equipment that do not disintegrate very easily.
Uh-huh.
They would go through and cause two holes, not one. That single hole was not caused by the center fuselage.
Right.
It was caused by, because the fuselage on a jet airliner is kind of like a very tough eggshell.
Yes, it's air.
It's aluminum, and it's built to withstand high blasts of wind.
Right.
But on hitting something very concrete, like a brick wall, would crush like an eggshell. But the jet engine, of course, would continue on to make a hole through the walls of the Pentagon, which this particular jet engine on the missile did. But if the 757 hit it, there would be two holes.
Okay. The government would have us believe that the wings of the 757 took out a series of light poles at the Pentagon. And if this is the case, wouldn't we be able to see some sort of evidence of wing damage on the walls of the Pentagon, like as to the beams? I mean,
next. If you go to the pictures of the World Trade Tower where the 767 hit the North Tower, and you can see a clear outline of the airplane, the number one engine, number two engine, and the 25-degree bang angle of the wing, dihedral of the wings in flight. Now, those wings are just, at those speeds, are very, they're like a sharp knife. And they cut through that steel just like a hot knife through butter.
Uh-huh.
Now, if you go to take a look at the Pentagon photos, none of those wing marks were on the Pentagon.
Right. There's no wing impact damage at all.
Nothing.
Yeah. Now, we published a book called Where is Flight 77 by Ian Barksdale, and one of the primary points he brings out is that he describes the nose and the fuselage of an airplane as like a sausage skin. And he even has photographs where a plane such as this is taxiing down a runway, goes off course, and runs at a very low speed into a pole, and it completely crumbles the entire nose, all the avionics and so forth. So if anything is going to create holes in the Pentagon, it's going to be out on the wings where the engine is, right? Not the nose.
That's correct. That's what I was trying to explain.
Yeah, okay. That's so important for everyone to remember.
Let's talk about the mysterious black boxes for a moment. They're supposed to be indestructible, but apparently the 757 that allegedly hit the Pentagon completely vanished once it struck. So what is the likelihood that the black boxes survived when the plane itself didn't? And also, what types of information could we extract from the black boxes?
Well, the two black boxes we're talking about are actually orange in color, but everybody refers to them as the black boxes.
Right.
And they're very highly sophisticated technical information collecting devices which come off the computers of the airplane, and they can tell. There's a cockpit voice recorder and a flight data recorder, and between the two, they are, for practical purposes, indestructible. They were designed to be that way, and they're located in the tail of the airplane to help them survive. And none of these information on these black boxes, so to speak, has ever been revealed to the public. And they would tell us a great deal as to what happened on these airplanes. Unfortunately, the government, like everything else, is constantly destroying evidence, just like they did at the Mirror Building in Oklahoma City and at the World Trade Center. They collected up all the debris, and that is a felony.
Uh-huh. Well, Russ, I've never seen firsthand a plane crash, but I've seen quite a few pictures on the Internet now. People are posting and showing what It's what the ground looks like when a plane wrecks on it. Now, the thing that's weird is that the lawn in front of the Pentagon, there's no burns, no burn marks, no scratch marks, no tire marks, no skid marks.
No plane wreckage.
No plane wreckage. It looks like basically a putting green. So, in your experience flying, is this, would this be consistent with a plane wreck when nothing has touched the lawn in front of it?
I can't imagine how they're getting away with it. It is such a, you know, again, it's hidden in plain view, and nobody questions the obvious.
Right, because I guess they ripped up the entire lawn shortly thereafter and covered it with sand, so nobody would see, but
it's covering up the evidence.
Exactly.
How likely is it that these alleged hijackers were able to steer this giant aircraft perfectly through five lamp poles just skimming the ground? How likely is it that they actually flew this course?
It is not likely at all. It is like someone showing me how to carve up a turkey and they say, okay, go perform a brain or an operation or a heart transplant. It's simply not possible.
Because, see, I was speaking with a friend last week and telling him about everything we're speaking about. And he said, oh, well, you know, they were on flight simulators, and all they had to do was just be able to steer the plane into the Pentagon. Now, I've never flown a plane, but you have. Is this accurate? Is this possible
and
that someone could do that?
Can they even do that with a flight simulator?
Well, you can simulate the flight into the simulator, but what I'm talking about is they're saying this airplane was doing around 500 knots, which
right.
is beyond the speed envelope. The VMO MMO speed of a 757 at down low is around 320 knots. And so it was exceeding its design speed envelope well over 100 knots. Now, when you start doing that and you start pulling high-speed turns, the airplane's going to start what they call high-speed stalls, and it's going to fall out of the sky. And these are performing. The only vehicle that could do that would be a missile or a jet fighter.
What is the possibility that shaped explosive charges were used in conjunction with perhaps a missile to punch a hole through the Pentagon walls? I mean, if a 757 hit the wall, would the wall still be there?
The details, the engineering details of the wall at the Pentagon. It was just that particular section has just been renovated to prevent that kind of thing. But as far as the both Eric and I believe that the missile which hit the Pentagon had somewhere between a 1,500 and a 2,000-pound warhead. Now, if you look at the impact photos, you can see a brilliant white flash, which indicates the oxygenized particles, which all good high-explosive military warheads have to enhance the explosion. And the original blast on those photographs taken from the parking lot show a brilliant white fireball.
Mm-hmm.
And that indicates that it was a high explosive device.
Right. It wasn't like a jet fuel explosion or kerosene. Yeah. Now, Russ, I'm going to hold a few pictures up, and I know you can't see these, but the viewers hopefully will. The first one is the overlay of a Boeing 757 into the Pentagon, and it shows how much it would have to take out if it actually did hit it. The second is...
And how it couldn't possibly have gone through that hole.
Yeah. The second is, of course, a picture of the Pentagon before the roofline collapses. And the final one, then, is an aerial shot of the Pentagon. Now, the official story is that this Boeing 757 went completely inside the Pentagon, exploded, then vaporized, and that's why nothing has been found. But from this picture, you can see there's no wreckage whatsoever in it. But the funny thing is, then they say that the people that survived in the Pentagon, they identified them through their DNA and their fingerprints. So how can human flesh not vaporize,
right,
but this tempered steel and galvanized aluminum
right,
can?
The entire plane can vaporize.
Well, you know, that's how they get caught in their own lies. I understand that DNA disappears above 120 degrees Fahrenheit anyway, number one. And so they're trying to burn up bodies, but, you know, human bodies are 75% water. We don't burn very well. And even if it did, you know, bones and teeth
that's
don't
right.
burn at all.
That's right.
So if you check with your funeral parlor when they cremate bodies.
My dad's a funeral director. Yeah.
Now, it's simply bizarre to think that these bodies would be completely burnt up by this jet fuel, which happened at the Pentagon. Now, something even more bizarre is that these, is of course everybody asks what happened to the 757.
Uh-huh.
Now, I don't know the answer to that. If I did, I probably wouldn't be here talking to you. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Wait, just go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I'm going to ask a question then?
Oh. I thought you weren't done. Were you done?
Well, yeah, but there's a whole bunch of other things we could talk about.
I just wanted to know, have you discussed any of this with any other pilots?
Yeah, I have. Not all pilots are convinced because they've been hoodwinked into believing what the administration's talking about. And they haven't really investigated this thing. Until I got into investigating it myself, I just kind of accepted the story until I investigating it.
Right.
With Eric.
Yeah.
And the more we investigated, the more I found out it was a complete fraud.
Yeah. Now, you were mentioning, and this is the thing everyone asks me as well, if this Boeing 757 didn't hit the Pentagon, where is it? But Dave von Kleist brings out a good point in his 9/11 in plain sight video where he says the burden of proof is actually on them, isn't
right.
it? Because they're the ones that came up with this story in the first place. So shouldn't they be the ones that are forced to prove that it did hit it?
Yeah, well, they should. But, you know, and there must be tons of security videotapes around showing vehicle that did hit the building, and yet they refused to show it.
Exactly, yeah.
Right. We only got to see 5 frames of what appear to be doctored video camera footage.
Yeah.
Getting back to the disintegration of the bodies and the airplane, people always bring that up, and they say, well, you know, hit the building at 400 or 500 knots or whatever, and it disintegrated. And I said, I'm glad you brought that up because of the fact that the space shuttle Columbia crashed over Texas about 19,500 miles an hour.
Right.
And they were picking up pieces of the space shuttle and the astronauts all over the state of Texas.
That's right.
Yeah. They just found, actually, it said on the radio today, they just found another piece from the space shuttle today. Mm-hmm. And this is, 2 years later?
Comment quickly about the cell phone calls that were supposedly made when this technology has just really been developed this year.
you're dealing with total Hollywood here. Cell phones do not work in fast, high-flying jetliners because of the fact you're only dealing with about 3 to 5 watts of power, and the airplanes are moving so fast from cell area to cell area that they don't really catch up to which they can't search out and lock onto the right cell, so they just flat out don't work.
Yeah.
Now, in a slow flying airplane, they may work. But these airplanes were fast, high flying machines, and the cell phones just will not work. I've tried it and tested it.
Yeah.
It won't work.
Yeah. Well, we have to go today, and I can't tell you how much I've been waiting to have you on the show today. From the first time I spoke with you, I says, man, I just wish it was on tomorrow. So
this has been invaluable. I really appreciate this.
And we want everyone out there to listen to what Russ Wittenberg has said today, because anything else that the mainstream media and all these other sites are putting out is they're trying to snow you. And this is a man that's flown planes. This is a man that knows about airliners.
This man has flown these kinds of planes.
And he's telling you right now.
I flew the actual 2 airplanes involved in 9/11.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, folks, watch this show, and then when you're done, watch it again, because this here is the real deal.
Let it sink in.
Right. Russ, thank you. We can't thank you enough.
Thank you so much, Russ.
For being
on. Thank you for having me on your show.
Okay, and take care. We'll be back tomorrow on Wing TV with
Tupper Saucy.
So tune in, folks. There's a lot going on. And thanks again, Russ.
Think for yourself.